Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Klink.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Scott Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's a Need to Know podcast. All thanks to the CIA Ops patron community. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, N2K Podcast, and online at ciaops.podbean.com.
Welcome along to the Need to Know podcast. Yes, it is the year 2021. We have survived 2020 and we're now into the new year. So I'll kick off by wishing everybody a happy new year. It's probably a little bit late now that we are in February, but nonetheless, looking forward to what 2021 will provide. So hopefully you got a bit of a break, took some rest and relaxation, and now you're getting back into it. I did the same too, so been a little bit of a dry spell between podcasts, taking a bit of a break, I thought. In reality, I just had too much to do. No, it was all a matter of, again, balancing some priorities, and hopefully getting some downtime before we start kicking up and doing this again regularly. So once again, I hope you enjoyed the break. Thank you very much for once again listening into the podcast, and hopefully we'll have a great year in 2021 that we can spend lots of time talking about all Microsoft technologies. Now, to kick things off, what wouldn't the news be without some updates from Microsoft Teams? So, January 2021, we have a post here from Microsoft talking about all the new stuff they've released into Teams. Again, we've got approvals. That's the ability, obviously, to automate that approval process. We've got an offline send. We can now have teams of 10,000 users for an org-wide team. We've also got some really nice new meeting settings here. What the one I really like here is the ability to prevent chat in meetings. So if you do schedule a meeting, there is now an option in your meeting options to go in there and basically turn off the chat if you want, which allows you to focus on the content. Now, that's really good when I do things like presentations, because you can get very distracted by the chatter that does happen on the side there. We've also still got a free audio conferencing offer there as well. So if you do want to take advantage of that, basically give you 12 months of dial-in audio conferencing with Teams. We've also got a range of new dedicated Teams devices put out by a variety of manufacturers. Lots and lots of stuff coming out there for the Teams to do the integration for us. Some first-line worker stuff as well around the shifts and whatnot. Again, this product just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So again, if you haven't seen that, go and have a look. I'll make sure I put the link up in the show notes so you can dive in. And again, have a look at all the new stuff Teams is. You'll see it rolling out into your environment shortly. You should notice a new meetings join experience as well that's popped up of late. Now, another one which you may not be aware of is the Microsoft Lists adoption resources. So again, I'll put the link in the show notes, but it's basically at adoption.microsoft.com. And again, there are lots and lots of options here to help you get up to speed with Lists. Now, Lists is, I think, really good for people perhaps who don't have a SharePoint background. They can just come straight into this fresh, start using Lists. It's nice, it's clean, it's modern. Again, really, really easy to use. Where I see people struggle a bit is if they have some previous experience with SharePoint and SharePoint Lists, and there's a bit of confusion around, is this different from SharePoint? Is it not SharePoint? Why does it look here? What does it do here? In a nutshell, it basically is SharePoint Lists with a nice new front end. But I'd recommend you go and have a look at this site to get up to speed. Lots of videos, lots of tutorials, lots of examples of where Lists make sense. So go out and check that resource. Now, Microsoft has been busy over the break. It's now released the version of Edge 88 we're now up to. It has some nice privacy updates. So again, we now get a password generator inside our Edge environment. So rather than having those crappy passwords of password 123 or whatever, we can now generate those on the fly. Many, many password managers already have that, but it's good and handy to have it in the browser. We've also got a password monitor, which means that, again, if you do choose to store your passwords in the browser, so you do choose to store them in Edge, then Microsoft will let you know if any of those passwords are basically found out there on the dark web. Now, fear not, it's not a case of Microsoft knowing your passwords. The way that it works via a hash. So this is an algorithm that computes a single number for basically, let's say, adding up all the digits in your password and then comparing that out to other hashes on the dark web. So you only get similar hashes when the text inside is identical. So they're not comparing passwords in clear text. They're comparing the hashes to see if there are any matches there. So think of it like fingerprinting in a way. We've also got improved privacy options there. Always like the privacy options here in Edge compared to other browsers as well. So again, lots and lots of add-ins there. We can also choose DNS. We've now got the option to choose different DNS providers as well. So again, if you are using your ISP or whatever, you can go into the option here in Edge and you can choose to maybe use Cloudflare or somebody else for that browser session. So that is basically a really, really handy little option if you do want to give that security a little bit of tweaking along the way. Now, to be honest, what I'm really waiting for in Edge is the vertical tab. So we have tabs for different sessions across the top of the page. Really busting to see vertical tabs come in so that I can have them down the side of my screen. That'd be really handy. Haven't seen this yet. Apparently it's in some of the developer builds, so keep your eyes peeled for that, and I'll let you know as soon as basically I see it in my environment. Now, some other news on OneDrive and SharePoint when it comes to administration. Much of this has been in separate consoles. So OneDrive had its own admin console and SharePoint had its own admin console. Well, kind of doesn't make sense when they're sort of the same thing. They are now being merged together, which is really, really handy. Just reduces the clutter, one place to go and so on. There's an article there. I'd suggest you go and have a look, all the reports. Now, what we're waiting for, I think, is the ability to determine whether our clients out there are syncing correctly or if there are any syncing errors in our environment. So that has not as yet appeared, but we expect that to appear shortly once these admin centers have been merged together. It's going to be really, really nice to be able to look at our admin reports and see if there are clients out there, workstations, endpoints that are having problems with sync and what those problems may be, doing that in a central manner. So we haven't seen that as yet, but that shouldn't be far away. And again, these two consoles merging together, I think, is a really a good move there. So go in, have a look, expect to see that rolling out in your tenant shortly. Now, another new application for your mobile device is Microsoft Lists for iOS. So we talked about Lists and their modern approach. Now, we now have a dedicated app for iOS, none for Android as yet. That won't be far away, I don't think, but remember, if you do have iOS, you can pop out to the Microsoft Store, the App Store, the Apple App Store, and go and have a look for Microsoft Lists. You'll be able to download that, put it on your machine, and then link it to your tenant. I've already done that. Works really, really well. Makes the ability to interact with these lists on a mobile device very easy. So again, if you're tracking a lot of information or you're using that to look up some things, having it on a mobile device is, again, really, really handy. There's a nice little video on there that does go into a bit of depth on that as well. Now, on the OneDrive and SharePoint side as well, we've also now got the support for 250 gigabyte file sizes. So I assume there are people out there who need file sizes of that size supported, you know, synced and uploaded and so on and held in document libraries. I think they're probably a bit of an edge case, but in this modern age, we've got 3D models, CAD files, you know, all sorts of data sets out there, but it's good to know that that size is being increased from 100 gigabytes, which it is now, to 250. So if you work with someone who really needs the big file size, you can let them know that the Microsoft technology now, Microsoft 365, does support file sizes up to 250 gigabyte. Now, the other interesting bit of news, and again, the article been there for you to have a look, Microsoft had a really tremendous quarter once again, something like $40 billion in revenue. You know, Azure's on a tear of 48%, and everything was basically up. Obviously shows you the focus that the lockdown has provided on technology and remote access. But one of the things that it did for the first time is it broke out or basically talked about the value of its security business. So to Microsoft, security is about a $10 $10 billion business, and it's growing at about 40% a year. Now, my opinion is that in the long run, only the biggest will survive. So I think, you know, the biggest companies out there doing security, of which Microsoft is probably one of the biggest, if not the biggest, they're the ones that are going to win here, because it's really now about signals. How many signals can we get? How much information can we get from our endpoints? Microsoft's got a lot of intelligence across all the data points, endpoints that it's got. It can look at interactions. It can look at who's attacking them. It can look for common signatures, common patterns, and then use that to its advantage and push that down to other customers and protect, you know, a much wider set. And they've also got really good technologies around AppGuard, Defender, and so on that integrate really, really well. Azure Sentinel is another one. So this business we expect to continue to grow in leaps and bounds. So again, good little article to read just to get a feel for the size and breadth that Microsoft Security is now. Now, the other thing that Microsoft recently announced is the next Ignite. So Ignite was back in November. They split it basically into two sessions. Rather than running it over 4 days remotely, it's a bit hard for everybody to take on and digest. They've now split it into two components. The second of these will run from March 2nd through to the 4th. Again, it will be a remote session there. So again, the signups we expect to open up shortly so that you can register and look at all the events and start scheduling. It'll be done for your time zone. So again, a lot of the presentations that you may miss because of time restrictions will be replayed and will also be available after the fact. So again, the previous Ignite from November is available for you to view the recordings, but the next one, where all the new announcements, especially around the admin IT pro side of the house, will be available and will be coming up from March 2nd to 4th. We then expect to see Microsoft Build more aimed at developers, and then it'll be interesting to see what happens with the partner conference, which is normally scheduled around June, July in Las Vegas. Given the current restrictions, I think that'll probably also be virtual. We're probably waiting a bit to see when Microsoft may start doing another in-person large conference again. I don't think it's going to be until probably 2022, but we will have to wait and see. But in the meantime, go in and take advantage of the Microsoft Ignite. Again, free for anybody to go and sign up and watch that information that Microsoft basically will provide for you. Now, as always, I thank you very much for listening into this episode. I hope you've got something out of it, and please enjoy the interview. After this, you can contact me on the Twitter at DirectorCIA. You can also send me an email, director@ciaops.com. Love to hear your thoughts. Love to hear what you would like to focus on, what you'd like to hear from in regards to Microsoft and Azure technology in 2021, and also any guests that you'd particularly like to have on to talk about the technologies. We've had lots and lots of people over the years. And again, if you want to hear anybody again, just let me know and I'll make sure that I tap them on the shoulder and see if I can get them to come on and spill the beans again on what they've learnt since they were last on. But again, I thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Need to Know podcast, and please enjoy this interview. So I'm joined by a returning guest to the Need to Know podcast. Welcome back, Alex Fields.
Thanks for having me, Robert.
So Alex has been on before, but since then, Alex has changed his situation there. So probably the best idea is just, why don't we throw over to Alex and get him to give us a bit of an intro of who he is, what he is, what he does, and where he's currently situated now. So if you could do that for us, Alex, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, certainly. So I am a real human. I live in Minneapolis, Minnesota, in the United States here. And, you know, for most of my adult life, I've worked at managed services providers. And, you know, obviously a lot of folks who follow my blog at itpromentor.com are also in that business. So I kind of naturally attract folks who do the type of work that I do. And I've been hearing a lot from them over the last year or so, especially with regard to building managed practices on top of Microsoft 365 services. And, you know, cybersecurity is certainly part of that, but there's also a whole lot of productivity and collaboration and stuff that, you know, the managed services providers out there, a lot of them are still a little bit behind the times, I think, when it comes to some of this, what's been happening in the Microsoft cloud. Like they're starting to get it. They're starting to be like, oh, that's more than just email. Like I'm missing something, aren't I? And so I felt that the demand is definitely there. I think the time is ripe, especially with some of the latest announcements coming out of Ignite this year. And so I felt that it was a good time to, you know, kind of move on. I had actually planned to, you know, retire early anyway. So this just accelerated the timeline a couple of years. So I basically just moved into doing whatever I want. And in this case, I'm just kind of responding to what I'm seeing in the marketplace and the needs that are going unmet as of today.
Cool. All right. We'll also need to mention that Alex is a Microsoft MVP, so lots of experience and obviously recognition from Microsoft around that. And that brings, again, a lot of additional knowledge to the fore as well. So as you mentioned, the security side is something that people are discovering in the Microsoft space now, especially in SMB. Like you said, they've tended to look at it as just the absolute basics, but there are all these sort of additional services that are now in play there. So, you know, what would you suggest is probably the one that's going to give the best bang for the buck that people don't know about? So what is sort of, you know, the security component, whether it's in an existing SKU that people have and they're not using? What do you see out there as sort of the most underutilized, you know, security option that Microsoft is currently providing, especially to SMB? You know, what is not being utilized or could be utilized out there to better effect?
Yeah, definitely. And so there's two pieces here. One is that certainly with a lot of the subscriptions that people already have today, especially in the small and mid-sized space, a lot of folks we're gravitating toward Microsoft 365 Business Premium. So anybody under 300 seats, that's usually a really great place to start. All-inclusive has, you know, all your device management, you know, security features, and as well as all the productivity apps and everything in one very affordable price point. So that's been highly popular for the SMB space, obviously. And everything that's included in that bundle, if you take a really good hard look at everything in there, you can basically achieve a really solid baseline level of security up to what the CIS, the Center for Internet Security, calls their implementation group one. So, you know, targeted towards SMBs, like here's all the things that you can put in place to bring your environment up to what is considered by the cybersecurity industry to be a very good standard practice. And so that is totally possible to accomplish with Microsoft 365 Business Premium and just the features that are included in there, such as, you know, Intune and Defender for Office 365 and so on. Now, that, if you look at everything in that SKU, it does a really good job of protecting devices. So everything in under Protect, you can use those services to help you identify and protect devices. If you want to get into detection and response, that's where you're looking at additional services or add-ons. Now, if you're looking at some of those other bundles in the enterprise space, you can look at Microsoft 365 E3. That still doesn't include much more than what, you know, Business Premium includes. So you're basically still just looking at Protect. If you want to get to that detect and response territory, you really have to move into E5 or the add-ons that make up E5. Okay. And as well, in addition to the Microsoft 365 space, they also have this tool called Azure Sentinel, which is a separate product, totally, you know, not offered with Microsoft 365. And so you can buy Azure Sentinel and use that regardless of what subscriptions you have. So as a managed services provider, I would suggest that Azure Sentinel is going to be their best bang for the buck and the best place to look to start a managed security practice. And the reason is because they don't have to learn a whole lot of new tools. They might be able to pull data off of existing tools that they already have, if they're using some third-party endpoint security service, if they're using some other security appliances on premises, they're monitoring firewalls, whatever. They can pull all that data into Azure Sentinel and have it analyzed. So that's a really good place to start if you're a managed services provider, particularly because in the Azure service, we have another kind of component to that called Azure Lighthouse. And Azure Lighthouse is the key piece for service providers because it gives them the ability to peer into multiple tenants. All of their various customers that they manage can be rolled up into Azure Lighthouse so that it can query data across all of those simultaneously, rather than, you know, if you have 200 different clients, you're logging into 200 different portals. So again, that's kind of where I suggest folks start, because it will get them into that detection and response territory, and they don't necessarily have to, you know, learn a whole bunch of other tools. Now, long term, I would suggest that, you know, if they are using disparate tool sets, if they have, you know, an endpoint security tool, and maybe they've got a separate, you know, service that they're running for, and a foothold detection or whatever, a lot of times they'll go into managed service provider and they've got like three or four different agents, you know, running on various machines. And really, with everything that we have between all of the various Microsoft tools, it's getting hard to suggest that, you know, if you're using an RMM tool today, in the future, maybe 2 to 3 years down the road, do you really need that anymore? Or could you just operate off of, you know, Microsoft Intune and the security stack that's in there, you know? And so I think that it makes sense to start looking now at starting to learn these tools, consolidate them, and start to bring them online. You're not going to be able to consume all of this all at once, but there's certainly, you know, an argument to be made that you could get started down that path and be ready to transition off of some of those traditional tools in just a couple of years' time.
All right, so let's just step back and define some things for people. So Azure Sentinel, which you mentioned, is what they call a SIEM tool. It's a security information event management tool. The idea here is that you connect it up to your services. It consumes all the event logs from those services, like Microsoft Cloud, Azure AD logins, threat protection, Exchange Online, all that sort of stuff, and consumes that, as well as third-party applications, AWS, for example, as well as potentially on-premises servers and workstations, so on. All the logs are fed into effectively a big database, and you can then run queries. The good thing about Sentinel is it'll provide an analysis of those signals for you automatically using the analytics that Microsoft provides with the tool, and you get a nice single-page report every morning that tells you if there's anything, any events you need to worry about. The good thing is it looks at, you know, multiple events. So an attacker's jumped in here and then done something over here. That's the real benefit of it. And again, it's cheap to set up, especially if you are using just the Microsoft Cloud services. Gives you great reporting, but there is a cost to doing it. So you would typically need an Azure subscription with that. But the cost is pennies generally to start off. And then some of the other things like Lighthouse, that is a service that allows you to basically authenticate to your own partner tenant and then be basically allowed access into other customer tenants that you have connected up. As Alex mentioned, Azure Lighthouse has been with us for probably 12 to 18 months now, and the Office 365 version is currently in private preview. We expect, you know, public preview probably early in the new year. So a lot of great tools in there, but I think probably one of the things I see, Alex, that is holding a lot of traditional MSPs back is a fear around Azure. You know, there seems to be this inbound fear as I don't understand it, what is Azure in inverted commas, and also there's this fear of cost overrun. They seem to believe that, you know, if they put their credit card or payments into Azure Sentinel, they'll get, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars worth of bills, you know, coming back at them. I mean, what do you see in regards, because what we're seeing is a lot of the tools you're talking about, a lot of the way Microsoft's going is obviously, you know, moving or being able to access a lot of this in Azure rather than in Microsoft 365. I mean, that's a bit of a mindset change for many resellers who probably have never touched Azure in their life, really.
Yeah, definitely. And so this is one of the key pieces where you really have to break. When I start working with managed service providers, and a lot of them will come to me through my website because they'll like something that they've read. Okay. And so one of the cool things about having a blog is being able to reach so many people in the world. And as well, I've learned that, you know, there are a lot of topics that as a writer, you can try to convince people like that they're wrong about something. But like as an example, you know, in the world of politics, it's really difficult to convince a Trump supporter, you know, that, you know, Joe Biden's a decent guy and is going to make a good president. That's really hard to do. But it turns out in the world of technology, you know, I can still do a pretty decent job of convincing folks that, you know, some of this new cloudy stuff isn't really anything to be afraid of. And in fact, it's going to make you more valuable than ever before. Okay. So what I one of the things that I like to talk about with the folks that I'm working with is what I call the mission line. And the mission line is, you know, based on a graphic or a visual. And it goes like this. So if you've ever seen the traditional stack, right, where they have like networking and hardware on the bottom, you lay your operating system and services down on the top of that. Maybe you have a database management layer. Eventually you have your applications, your line of business applications, your productivity applications, and so on, all installed on top of that, right? Well, the mission line is a dotted line that you draw through the middle of that diagram, okay? And right through the database management layer. And the dotted line is a delineation. And the delineation is what is important to the business in terms of value, what helps drive their mission forward, what's the things that actually add value to the business. And then everything beneath the line is merely a cost center. It is essentially saying, you know, this is a delineation between commodity and value. And so everything below the line for a small business owner doesn't matter, right? They don't care about the knickknacks. They don't care about the networking and hardware and operating system. They just want some stuff that works, right? And so, you know, as managed services providers, they're coming from a world where they had to look after the devices. They had to look after the stuff, right, of technology, these, you know, knickknacks, basically. And that is the wrong place to focus moving forward. So if you're a managed services provider today who's basically still charging based on device and still doing a lot of their maintenance and, you know, service and visits and stuff around managing devices, you know, you're not where you need to be. Okay, that's in the past. And the reason is really simple, because it's all cost based. It's all below the line. It's not important to the businesses anymore. The goal in that case is to shrink that cost as far as possible, so it's a race to the bottom. The only way you're going to make money in this sphere is by achieving a large amount of volume, right? That's the only way to make a lot of money in that space. You have to have a lot of volume because the margins are razor thin, and it's a race to the bottom in terms of cost. So it makes sense to outsource that stuff as much as possible, okay? And the way that you do that is through the cloud, right? That's the whole thing. Now, interestingly, where the cloud is maybe not as cost effective is actually in infrastructure as a service. So if you're only covering like networking, hardware, operating system, you know, that's not as cost effective as going to something like platform as a service, where you're taking everything up through the database management layer, which is basically the delineation line for cost and value, or software as a service, where you actually get login to like a live application that end users you know, work with. And so that's where you're going to find most small businesses gravitating just naturally, not because they necessarily even have articulated and understand all that like an explicit way, but they just kind of get it. They just don't want to mess with, they don't want to be in the data center business, okay? They don't have any interest in that. It doesn't help them drive their business forward. And so if managed services providers realize this, then they can shift their focus to everything that lays on top of that dotted line. They can start to shift their focus above the line and help organizations, you know, actually focus on the things that matter in terms of their line of business applications, the productivity applications, insights that they can get out of data, Power BI and so forth, automation, like from Power Automate, whatever. There's lots of opportunities there. And as well, when it comes to security, you know, a lot of the, you know, you really get to up your game in that regard as well. So you can really start to talk to the business about risk and risk management and compliance management and some of those more advanced features. So you have a lot of opportunity there. And Microsoft provides, you know, tons of tools to help you with all of these things. Okay. So Sentinel is, you know, a service that I mentioned. It's more of a platform as a service. It's not really infrastructure. So the cost-wise, it's very effective. And as well, you really don't have to manage anything that you would normally have to manage. So if you're installing like a SIM on premises, you're installing a security information management, that's not a small undertaking, okay? I mean, you have to plan to have quite a lot of storage usually, and you'll have to retain log data for a long time, and you're gonna be connecting a lot of different log sources to it. And you're gonna need to worry about the connectivity and also to keep that potentially segmented off of you know, typical networks. So you're going to have some pretty complicated, access control lists and stuff internally in your network so that you're segmenting out and keeping some of those management and security appliances away from the typical end user networks. That's a lot more work. And a lot of that stuff, again, doesn't add value to an organization. It's just a cost center. Just some, you know, it's like an annoying pill they have to swallow. They just have to get it done. But if you do this in the cloud, you can be up and running quickly and you don't have to invest in any hardware. And as a bonus in the Microsoft cloud, since so much of our data and workloads are moving into the Microsoft space, you know, Exchange Online, SharePoint Online, OneDrive for Business Teams, and so on, the more data you put in there, the better in some ways, because I can ingest security information from all of those services and including my endpoints. If I'm using a, you know, Defender for endpoint, for instance, all of that data I can ingest for free. So that's a big thing, because storage is probably your number one cost in the cloud. And anything that I can ingest for free, I definitely will take advantage of that all day long. And, so the more I can operate off the Microsoft platform, the better it's going to be for me.
So I think one of the interesting things that I see out there is that what we're beginning to see is actually we're seeing companies building offerings on top of and connecting to the Microsoft Security Service. So effectively, they're now offering outsourced SOC style services. So they're using the APIs and whatever to connect to multiple customers' environments, suck those logs and that monitoring into their own, you know, platform, and then provide an outsourced, security offering and monitoring service. And I've seen two or three of those in the past few weeks beginning to pop up and appearing on Microsoft videos. So obviously they're working and partnering with Microsoft. Now, yeah, going forward in your vision here, do you see or do you believe, again, that, you know, the typical, you know, smallish MSP with a limited amount of staff is going to be able to manage, you know, not only set up these security connections and services for each and every customer, but also to go in and monitor these effectively at the level they're going to need to be done? Or do you see this is where we're going to see larger providers aggregate their services, you know, just purely in security or, you know, the operations control side of it, and actually provide that service to customers or maybe, you know, resell it through MSP? So do you think that it's getting large enough that perhaps the security side is getting beyond the average MSP?
Yeah, that's possible. So I could see it going both ways. I would advocate that especially smaller managed services providers today, if you start to really do a good job of moving your customers, more of their data, more of their services and apps into the Microsoft 365 space, you're looking for ways to offload any other line of business apps that might traditionally have been running on premises, get those into the cloud. So if they had some other CRM on premises or something, look at alternatives like Salesforce Online, right? Get as much stuff into SaaS as possible. That's going to help you reduce what it is that you need to manage. And now the things that you're left managing, like the endpoints, you know, you can manage all of that stuff using the native Microsoft tools. And I would suggest that's going to free up some capacity for you to focus in this area of cybersecurity and potentially, you know, become a SOC, which is going to be an interesting thing. Now, the problem is you can't get there overnight, right? And certainly, if you're going to start working with some of these tools and you're going to start building a true security operations center where your goal is not per se the availability of services, which is what IT's job is, but it's more about, cybersecurity, the integrity, confidentiality of data, and so on. And so that's a different, those different set of goals. It's a different set of hats that you have to wear. And you're going to have to start somewhere, which means you're going to have to dedicate actual, you know, capacity, resources, people to these tools. They don't drive themselves, okay? Like, I don't want to oversell these in any way. They're not magic, right? You have to understand how they work. You have to understand how to run them and configure them. And then as well, to just maintain them on an ongoing basis. And you're going to start to get a lot of data that you never had before. And so you're going to have a lot more to react to that you never had before. But I think it's also interesting because, in my opinion, from what I've seen of the tools, if you do a good job of this, you should be able to scale your business much better than what you're doing today. Okay, so as an example, you know, a lot of the self-healing and automated response technologies that are included here, this should help a lot of managed services providers to achieve really good scale. So it's two pieces. One, it's starting to move in the direction of more specialization, which is going to involve outsourcing some things, certainly, and getting more and more out of the business of being an on-premises services. You know, don't worry about all of the stuff that you used to worry about in the past, your firewalls and, you know, servers and operating systems and all that stuff, all the services used to manage, remote desktop services, all that. You know, get away from that and start to move toward pure SaaS applications and managing those SaaS applications with a new cloud-based architecture that's built for the cloud-first, mobile-first world. You know, this is a new specialization. It's going to change how you spend your time, but you have to be willing to make that commitment and take those steps for sure. And so, yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I could see, you know, the organizations who start moving in this direction now might be in a interesting position 2 years from now, 3 years from now, because there's going to be a lot of managed services providers who don't do this, right? And they're going to need to evolve with the times. They're going to need to be able to provide that higher level of service, and they're going to be coming from behind. So in their case, they might end up outsourcing to a partner, right? They might be looking for someone who is a specialized SOC. And so I could see, you know, some managed services providers who are still you know, stuck in their old ways and not knowing where else to go, they're going to have to do something. They're either going to have to do it themselves in-house, or they're going to have to outsource it. And if they're doing that, I don't know how much longer they have on the business they're on today, if you know what I mean.
So I think an interesting thing is when you sort of, you know, go down the cybersecurity rabbit hole, let's call it, you've got to look at, obviously, you know, security in total for an organization. You've got your endpoints, you've got your, you know, services like Microsoft 365 plus third-party services. And this in totality is a lot of things to monitor. You're going to be getting potentially lots and lots of alerts, the majority of which are probably going to be benign. I think the big challenge for most people is that, you know, in the MSP world, I think they're pretty used to an RMM tool that's reporting back and giving them the, you know, the occasional heartbeat that everything's all right, the disk's not full, all that sort of stuff. But I think when we move to the security side of the table, all of a sudden there's this deluge of, you know, alerts and events and, you know, what happens here and is that important? Is that not important? Is it here? We've got endpoints. We've got, you know, attempted logins to Azure AD. I think that's one of the most daunting things that when people do take this on is just the sheer volume of events that start coming at them and trying to discern which is important, because the traditional method has generally been that, you know, we only get a ping when there's a problem. You know, if the disk is full, we get a ping. Unless that, we don't get a ping. But today in the security world, because you've got to be across so many signals, across so many different locations and services, that volume of data is super daunting. Now, Microsoft certainly is beginning to give us the tools to move through that. But sort of, would you agree that this is something that can be very daunting the very first time you start connecting this up, turning alerts on, you know, getting all these signals together? Or it's a case of, oh my God, you know, here comes the tide sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I mentioned that, you know, when you start this up, especially if you're a small managed services provider, my recommendation would be that you peel off a resource, at least one person, if not two. Two would be more ideal. If you're really small, that may not be possible. But if you're, you know, if you have any amount of size to your MSP, if you're a dozen people or more, if you can peel someone off and dedicate them, or a couple people dedicated part-time to getting this up and running, you know, there's some things they're going to learn about it right away, just as far as, you know, configuring it, getting services onboarded, data starting to get ingested, and then to start getting an idea of some of the built-in, like there's pre-canned alerts, but then there's also the idea that, right, you can query the data at any time. You can go hunting on that data. You might learn about something new. You know, if you have a customer who becomes compromised and you are, you know, you isolate this system that was a few systems that were compromised, you might do some digging and find a few artifacts. You might find, hey, we think that one of the first things that these the attackers did was run this command. Okay, let's search across our environment for anywhere else that those commands have been run. Maybe they're not as far along on some of the other endpoints out there, or maybe there's other customers where the same attack is unfolding we don't even know yet, but you can start to look for some of those things and you're saving some of those queries. But they, again, this is all through their experience. And every organization is going to build up their own experience. It's going to get both written into the memory banks of each individual person, but as well, it's going to be, you know, written into their tools. So they're going to continue to write their own proprietary information, and what they've learned, their knowledge base is going to grow on the tools that they've adopted. Now, the interesting thing too, you mentioned, you know, that's true that there can be a lot of noise. Like when I first got started with Sentinel, I just turned on all the canned alerts and stuff, and I just got overwhelmed with so much, and most of it's junk, right? That's kind of interesting, because it doesn't mean you shouldn't be looking at it. And then sometimes, yeah, it turns out that this was, false positive, or it doesn't really, it's not anything to be concerned about. But, you know, the machine, like I said, these aren't magical tools. They can't do everything for you. The machine's not going to be able to spot every intrusion attempt and be able to positively identify that with a high level of confidence. But humans, interestingly, still have a pretty big role as of today. The AI is going to continue to get better and better, I'm sure. And as of today, there's still no confidence rating. Like, it would be great if my alerts had relative confidence ratings. Already, we have some things that are kind of nice, like multiple alerts that they believe are probably related. Even if it's across different domains or different data sources, they can collect those together into an incident for you. You can also manually add different alerts and things that are coming up into an incident. In other words, a collection of alerts. Say all of these things are related to the same basic incident, right? So you can start managing things at the incident layer rather than the alert layer. So yeah, the tools are there. It is going to take dedicated time. And that's what I'm saying is, like, you know, these are, what I'm talking about here is you're developing cybersecurity professionals. This is something that you haven't had before. You're probably going to charge more for these people's time than you would for your typical, IT technician who's running, IT generalist requests. This is a specialized skill set. You're going to charge more for that. You're also going to be looking at different certifications. You're not going to be looking at, the standard like MCSE or whatever they call it these days, or something else, I suppose. But, the regular Microsoft certifications, that's not really where it's at. They can get some certifications in Microsoft products, but you're probably also looking at Certified Ethical Hacker or CISSP and similar. So there's, definitely a shift taking place. Or if you're going to move toward advanced cybersecurity practices, then you need to be looking not only at these tools. That's just one piece of it. That's just going to help. It'll help you to surface the data, and it'll help you to focus on the data that you need to be the most concerned about. But interpreting that data, understanding how to run incident response and so on, understanding how to evaluate risk for an organization, how to communicate risk to an organization, that's a higher level skill set. That's a real resource commitment they have to make. Yeah.
I think one of the interesting things too that I see out there is that typically with the MSP world, as it has been on-prem, it's always been a case of, a limited set of signals, and everything that comes in we need to react to, we need to deal with. It's a warning signal, that's pretty obvious. I think that, in the security space, there's so much, obviously, the signals we talked about, but I think there's also the additional complication is simply the hype. I mean, every time you open the internet, there's some sort of, threat vulnerability that's going to, cause the world to stop working, and the sky is going to fall, and sort of navigating your way through, okay, hang on, what's relevant? What's, what is actually important I need to pay attention to, versus the millions of things which are, again, very obscure, obtuse, or don't apply to my environment. I think that also makes it, very hard for people to really, be able to cut through that and say, right, what do I really need to focus on? What should I be paying attention to? Because, again, you've got lots of organizations now with lots of warnings, and it's becoming a bit of a Chicken Little, environment where everything's bad, everything's going to kill you, quick, go and fix this, do this. I think, one of my assessments is it's really hard to change from a traditional approach to infrastructure to this new world where
there's stuff being sent and thrown at you via social media and other people. It's just there's a huge amount of stuff to cut through, apart even from the signals that you're receiving. I mean, is that what you're seeing? To me, it just seems to be there's a lot of stuff which is overhyped when it comes to security that really, you know, on pure evaluation, when you look at it, really isn't something you should be particularly focused on, but it certainly draws your attention. I mean, what's your experience in that sort of, you know, that sort of thinking?
Yeah, I mean, and again, when you have some folks who are going to be focused on cybersecurity, they're going to, when they first step into it, I think you're right, there's a little bit of calibration that has to occur. Obviously, you know, I actually feel that one of the best sources of information in cybersecurity that I know of right now is actually Twitter. So Twitter, following some of the folks who are in cybersecurity, when there is something crazy happening in the world, you're going to hear about it on Twitter for sure. And there are, you know, there's going to be a lot of noise there, but there are certainly voices, and you'll get to know who they are. You'll understand.
So I think again, this is the challenge: is who's the good one, who's the bad one. So, do you have any off the top of your head that you'd recommend people? You know, like one or two that you'd reckon, look, these are good people, or this is a good source on Twitter? Because unfortunately, I think most people are pretty skeptical of the value that you can get out of, you know, these sort of social media. So off the top of your head, do you have anybody that you can call out that is a good example, or a feed that is a good example of this?
Well, sure. There's actually someone who just moved to Microsoft recently, Kevin Beaumont. His Twitter handle is at Gossie the Dog, G-O-S-S-I the Dog. And, you know, he is an awesome source of information. And that's just one that just jumped off the top of my head because I just saw something from him earlier. But, you know, and there's just a lot of other really good folks. And once you'd start to follow one or two of these people, right, like you'll see that there's like, you know, there's some really widely followed Twitter handles out there, like Swift on Security. And they're fun to follow. It's mostly junk, but there's some good nuggets in there. But you're gonna get into that whole ecosphere. And if you're working in the Microsoft space, you know, I would also say that it makes sense to follow, you know, some of the people who are in the Microsoft security space, you know. And so, you know, if you're following like, you know, Alex Weinert and Alex Simmons you know, just some of the folks who work in that Microsoft security space, who work at Microsoft, that's a really good place to go because they're actually really knowledgeable about products and things that are coming out in the products. But yeah, there's, like I said, when you first step into it, there's definitely a calibration that takes place. But once you get to know, you know, who are the really good sources, as well, you can often get subscribed to intelligence feeds. Like I belong to a really good group on Facebook as well. It's another good place. There's a ransomware and security group that you should be able to join that is actually headed up by Susan Bradley and Amy Babinchek. And I know that you're familiar with some of those same folks, Robert.
Yep.
And so
we'll put the links in the show notes for those as well.
Yep. Those are really good sources of information. And yeah, it's one of those things like if you're trying to do this as an IT generalist, I don't think you'll ever quite make sense of it. If you take the time to really dive into cybersecurity, and that's what you're going to start paying attention to, and you start going to the conferences and you start meeting some of these people, you know, then your BS meter is going to go stronger and stronger. And as well, it just helps that you'll get more context by, you know, yes, by learning, by, you know, connecting with other people who are doing the work. And as well, you know, by actually doing the work. So like running up against situations, running up against, you know, incidents that you have to respond to, having to contain, you know, attacks that are unfolding and actually working to isolate and remove people from an environment before real damage is done. So if you get into one of those situations a couple of times, you're going to learn probably a lot faster than anything you could learn, you know, in social media or just by studying the various products and so forth. Now, if you're just starting out, you know, a lot of this might be, you know, a little over your head or whatever. I would recommend just really focusing hard on a very basic cybersecurity framework such as the CIS controls. And those are, you know, it's a very simple, it's like a simplified version of the NIST cybersecurity framework, which contains something like 150 different controls or something, which is insane. The CIS controls are the top 20 things that you need to do to achieve a good baseline level of security in your organization. So if as a, like in the beginning, if you just start working like, how do I solve these things? And by the way, you can solve that entire list mostly just using Microsoft 365 Business Premium. So if you start working through how you're solving for some of those things, you know, that's a really good place to start while you're ramping up, before you ever think about your detection response and responding to all these signals and all that stuff. Just working on the basics from the ground up. If you do like the basics really, really well, and you do a really good job of learning that, you're gonna have a lot more context and a lot more understanding when you get into some of the more advanced security where you're actually responding to incidents and you're trying to contain, you know, you're working more on containment than on prevention, right? But the basics are highly important. So like, you know, consider, you know, that's maybe like 90%, right? If you can get the basics really well, you're gonna be so far ahead. And the rest, the last, you know, 10 to 20% that you have to learn is really difficult to learn. And there's so much to it, and there's a lot of BS, and there's, but there's a lot of good stuff out there too, but it's gonna be a harder road, that last 20%.
So a couple of things is I'll put a link into obviously those groups for people as well. I've also got a link in there to a file I have on my GitHub repository that also has a lot of these Twitter feeds that I've discovered that are worthwhile. So again, use that link that's in there. I think the comment that I have is what I see a lot of, especially the smaller MSPs and resellers out there, what they try and do is they try and add this cybersecurity concept to their existing, you know, to their existing practice, when in reality, they've either got to throw something away, they've got to make room for it. They can't just keep adding this sort of service, especially the cybersecurity one, because there's just so much, as we've talked about, that needs to be done and understood and learnt. And just adding it to a practice, I think, is a recipe for failure, because one of the things about security is you really have to do it properly. You have to invest the time. You have to learn the signals. You have to, because it's so easy to miss that critical signal or overlook something or not have something, you know, correctly configured, that can really come back and bite you in the backside. So I think that is the message that you're giving people as MSPs, that you need to carve out a space, a dedicated space. And if you are going to be serious about this, be serious about it, allocate the resources, the time, the training, the knowledge, to get up to speed with it. And that may mean a business decision around, you know what, we shouldn't be doing things like infrastructure, as you've mentioned, or whatever. I think it's a case of, if you want to do it properly. Is that sort of your basic message here, Alex?
I hesitate to say yes, straight up. I think that, yes, a lot of that is true. I also don't want to scare people away from it, because I think that there's a tendency, you know, to think like, oh man, this sounds like so much and I have to totally change my business and everything. Like I said, nothing happens overnight. You can accomplish quite a lot simply by saying, you know what, I'm going to start by protecting time. And there's going to be someone in your organization, someone's going to be really interested in cybersecurity. Not everyone is, you know, not everyone's going to be interested in cybersecurity, but it's going to provide the people that work for your organization, it's going to provide them another opportunity, another place to advance their career and their knowledge. And if you can protect their time and start out with, you know, part-time, protect, you know, 20 hours a week for them to develop a cybersecurity practice, and what they're developing it on, first of all, is not your customers, it's on you. Right, they want to develop the cloud first, mobile first version of your cybersecurity offering for your organization specifically, and we're talking about again that baseline level of protection. What is our baseline? What are we going to standardize on? Do it for yourself first, so you understand what the experience is like. You know, you might be doing things that you haven't done yet, like taking away local admin privilege and stuff like that. And how do you manage that? You know, means like, you know, users can't just install their own software anymore. How do you take care of that, right? So what's the process that you're gonna have to develop for that? And, you know, they can help you solve that for your organization, then you can go repeat it for your customers. And now this is a service you can sell, right? So if I'm thinking about it from the perspective of the Microsoft tools, it might mean that my deployments now are done through Autopilot. And any software that they need on their device, we push through autopilot, which means I have to do a better job of keeping track of which customers get which software packages, right? And staying on top of the updates for those packages. When a new version of that package comes out, I may have to go into the portal and update it for them so that they can get the latest version of their software or whatever. But there's a few things that, as you go to start solving for some of these security controls, you're going to learn that it's not really that different from what you may be already doing, but it could be going much further and providing a better baseline for where your customers are today. And another reason I think the cybersecurity I like to push on a lot, there's a lot of opportunity in Microsoft 365. We're not even talking about the productivity side and things that you can offer there. But in the space of cybersecurity, this can actually be really beneficial for your customers. Today, I'm seeing people get hurt, okay, because they're not doing it right. Like, there are still so many managed services providers out there who deploy endpoints to users, and they just think that it's okay to leave everything wide open and not have any, don't take away local admin privilege and, don't worry about the security software too much. Maybe just throw a little antivirus on there or whatever, but they're not taking it any further than that. And it's dangerous. Okay. It's getting people hurt, and they wonder why their customers are still getting hit with ransomware. Okay. And you can eliminate so much of that by taking some of the just basic cybersecurity steps without even getting into some of the more advanced tools that we touched on. That, could be a later step in your journey. You might start by offering an essentials service, right, where you're doing the security essentials and you're deploying endpoints to them using autopilot, and you're, taking care of, their basic endpoint security, and you're doing some antivirus and attack surface reduction rules through the Microsoft Defender that's included with Business Premium. You're doing some of that stuff. As you get further along, you've already got some cybersecurity experience with the resources you've dedicated. You've started to make some money on that, so you're able to fund the next step in your journey. Okay, now you're able to fund that advanced security step that you need to take, getting into detection and response. And you take your customers on that journey too, right? You help them understand risk, the risks that they're accepting and the risks that they're eliminating. And then as you add up more services, you can help them understand, here's the additional risks we're eliminating if we add some of these additional services, down the line. But I think that there's certainly a baseline that most managed services providers today aren't hitting. And I think that everyone, even if you're not going to go into a full SOC, everyone needs to be hitting that baseline. Everyone needs to dedicate at least some more resources towards cybersecurity. And unfortunately, the world we live in today, you just got to do it. You're not going to be able to get away with not doing it. If you don't do it, you're going to lose your customers. You might lose your business. You might lose your customers to someone else who is doing it. Okay. Or you're going to have to outsource it and partner with a cybersecurity, firm. But however you decide to solve it, you have to be thinking about it.
And I think one of the examples I'll point to is the concept, unfortunately, that a lot of people don't seem to be across, is the modern auth, basic auth, and how turning on MFA doesn't necessarily disable basic authentication, which can allow password spray attacks and brute forcing of passwords. I see that as a very, very common thing, and that's an easily fix. So there's a lot of the basics, as you mentioned, that people need to pay attention to and do it, as you say, as a base level well. It's still, I agree with you, very much below par for most installations I come across. A lot of the basics just aren't done, and it's something that in general the industry does need to lift its game to provide that minimum protection. The options are there. They're just typically got to be turned on. Microsoft, I think, is doing this slowly but surely with, all of these things like secure defaults coming along and them being enforced and changing the forwarding rules and the policy. So basically, if you don't do it, Microsoft is going to do it for you, and that can have an impact because it may not happen when you expect, sort of thing. So, all right, Alex, we are reaching the end of our time here. So what I'll get you to do maybe is just give people a bit of a summary there, any good tips, recommendations, and then finally to finish off, just how people can get in contact with you, follow what you do, keep up to date if they do wish to do that, and maybe ask you any follow-up questions.
Yeah, sure. So you know, obviously I blog at itpromentor.com fairly regularly, probably at least a couple times a month. There will be an article there. And as well, you know, you can follow me on Twitter at Van V Fields. There's, you know, a couple other places where I've got some activity right now. You know, on Gumroad, I have several guides available for Microsoft 365 services with an emphasis on security. And then, you know, just a couple of courses that start to lay some of this out on Teachable. So I do have a Teachable that I link to through my website where you can just step through some of the security essentials that I mentioned. That's really focused on the Microsoft 365 Business Premium. And then toward the end of this year, early next year, I will have the Advanced Security course out, which will cover off on Microsoft 365 Defender products, such as Endpoint, Defender for Endpoint, Defender for Office 365, and so forth. And then Azure Sentinel. So that's, you know, forthcoming.
Excellent. All right. Well, I'll make sure that those links are in the show notes for people. Do reach out. Make sure that you do follow Alex on the Twitters and the socials and reach out to him. I'm sure he's more than happy to speak to you or to answer any questions or clarify anything that we've spoken about today. I will take the opportunity to thank Alex for his time and his knowledge and sharing that with the listeners today. So once again, Alex, thank you very much for doing that for us.
Thanks.
Excellent. All right. Well, again, I will take the opportunity to thank everybody who has listened to this episode of the Need to Know podcast, and I'll speak to you all on the next episode. Thanks for listening.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Microsoft 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selections available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.